Welcome to the PCS to Corporate America podcast from Cameron Brooks. Our mission here at Cameron Brooks is to help educate junior military officers about their transition options and to inspire veterans to transform their lives and their careers.
All right, welcome everyone. This is the January 2024 Career Conference Review. You can see I've got Austin and Colin and Harry on the call. I'm going to introduce them in a little bit, and then I'm going to let them introduce themselves here after we get started. I want to share with you first a little bit about the conference. So I want to give you the overview, sharing with you how the January 2024 Career Conference went. And I want to do that relatively quickly because I want to get into letting some of our most recent alumni tell their story. So we're gonna do these slides a little bit quicker just to give you some perspective. We'll do takeaways. We'll talk about some of the companies, positions, and schedules. And then, like I said, we'll get right to the alumni. The way that we'll do it tonight as it relates to the Q&A, I've sent them some questions that I'm going to ask them initially. And then once we work through all of those, I'd like for those who are attending this live, please type in your questions into the chat. You could start typing them in whenever you want, and we'll work through some of the questions that I've developed for the group, and then we'll get to your questions. And I'll be the moderator for those, and I'll let these guys take all the questions. And so so let's just start a little bit about the conference itself. So there was 43 officers there. And all but one of those officers were pursued at the conference, a 97.7, with the one person. I'm sure some of you are wondering, okay, what happened to that one person? That person came to our program pretty late. They weren't exactly prepared to interview. They were trying to get up to speed, and quite frankly, they just weren't prepared and didn't get over the bar. However, I will tell you that I've done two mock interviews for two different roles that this person's pursuing outside of the conference, and he's about to get an offer. So even though he did not get pursued out of the conference, which again is pretty unlikely, pretty unusual, that doesn't mean that we're going to not walk alongside that person. And so he's really close to accepting an offer at a good company and a good opportunity that he's going to do well in. The average number of interviews at this conference was 7.6. That's a low number. If you think about the April 2020 conference, the average number of interviews in April 2020, I would argue near the height of economic uncertainty was 7.2. So this conference, just from average number of interviews, was a little bit closer to the first COVID virtual conference that we did than the November 2023 conference, the last conference we did. And so what's the why behind that? That's a question that I think everyone wants to know. Certainly, this would be speculation. I think that in 2020, everything got tight and stayed relatively tight until halfway through 21, and then it got fairly loose. And all of 22, it got very loose. As a matter of fact, in 2022, we were having to put companies on a waiting list, which we probably will never see again, at least as long as I work at Cameron Brooks. And then in 23, it kind of, you know, the pendulum started to swing back. So if you would have asked me before the January conference if I thought it would be more like November, I would have said yes. And so I think with the new year and the election year and the fact that Jerome Powell and the Fed has not reduced rates yet, they've said they will, and I assume they will this year, a couple of times at least, haven't done that yet. So there was a little bit of tightening. And so I'll tell you exactly what that means and what that would look like. Yes, softer demand. But I will say that those who came to the conference with a growth mindset, and we'll talk more about that, those who came with a growth mindset definitely got pursued. So the pursuit rate was 63%. So what does that mean? Like, this isn't a job fair. Companies are coming with open positions. And so every officer, and we'll look at one of these schedules here in a moment, every officer came and had an interview that was specific to their background, their interests, and some of the things that they're looking for. Every single officer had a custom built, if you will, interview schedules. And companies are attending the conference with open positions. Obviously, I made that red and bold and italicized. These are open positions that companies are coming to pursue. They're looking for military officer leadership for these positions. But here's the challenge. And this comes up a couple of times in this presentation based on the January conference. You'll hear this a lot from Cameron Brooks. Like, you want to come to the conference and be a giver. Every company is coming to the conference with an open position, meaning they have a problem, so to speak. You have a problem too, right? You have a submitted resignation that's been approved by your headquarters, and you've got a separation date. And so you too have a problem. But the idea is, come to the conference with the determination that in every interview, you can prove to that company that you can solve their problem, that you can come into an organization and really bring them value. And if you do that, I'm telling you, companies are very motivated then to solve your problem. But that is just how the equation works. They've got to believe that you can solve their problem. And if they truly believe that, then they'll turn around and try to solve your problem. And the people that got the most pursuits at this conference were the people that walked out of every interview exhausted, trying to convince companies that they can actually solve their problems. 27 out of the 30 hiring groups invited candidates for follow-up interviews. So you can believe that companies are motivated. Again, this is not a job fair. They are motivated to pursue candidates at the conference. The average number between the end of the conference and someone accepting an offer was about 2 weeks, 13.2 days, just to give you perspective of how long it takes after the career conference. The takeaway with that is, when you come to the conference, you are in the hiring process at the conference. Different than like a job fair or applying online or getting a buddy to refer you. You come to the conference, you're at the conference and in the hiring process. And I think the speed with which that happens sometimes surprises people, especially if you've been in this program for a while and you're just kind of slowly plodding along, waiting for the conference. And then, boom, the conference hits and things move very quickly. And our alumni will hopefully attest to that as they tell their own story. But I think that to be true. So what about the economy itself? Well, companies are being selective. There are definitely opportunities out there. But as I've said, these companies are favoring the people who are prepared, the people who believe that these officers or an officer can solve their problem and bring value. And so as you transition, just remember, you got to keep your leadership at the forefront and you got to keep connecting on that. Team leadership, idea leadership, process leadership, cross-functional leadership, change leadership. Bring your leadership, because that's really and truly the thing that they're looking for. Obviously, use DPP, that can help. Here's another thing that I think is, we're just seeing more and more of this lately. You can see the bullet, it says read or listen and devote yourself to really increasing your knowledge. It's such an important point, because I think sometimes officers think that the reading program is a nice to have. I've got to do the tabs. I've got to do, you know, construct my interview answers, but a reading's kind of a nice to have. I'm going to tell you right now, the more books that you read, the more knowledge your knowledge is expanded, the more connectivity you have in the interview, the more, you know, you're just better at connecting dots. You know, if I was to ask you an interview question without any context whatsoever, hey, tell me about a time you led your team to reach a significant operational goal. Without any context, you would just give me an answer and it would be like, okay, cool, sounds good. But when you know the industry and the company and the position you're interviewing for and the person you're talking to, suddenly that becomes a different question in different interviews, and your ability to adjust and flex and make connections, some of that ability just comes from the knowledge that you've gained through the program. So listen, if you're not much of a reader, no problem. Subscribe to Audible, listen to all the books, right? That works just as fine. But find ways to increase your knowledge. It will definitely make you a better interviewer, because you'll just connect the dots so much faster. Last point. We humans tend to infer intent based on what other people say. So someone says something to you and there's a piece of us that infer what they mean by that. And so sometimes someone will say something at the conference with like innocence and it'll be read in a certain way. And I'll talk to the person after the interview or after I get feedback and they'll say, well, I didn't say that or I didn't mean that. Be real careful with the way that you communicate specific points to hiring managers, because it is human nature, you all. We tend to infer intent with what we say. And it's not just an interviewing thing. It's a life thing. And so just be very careful that when you're communicating, you're really putting yourself in the shoes of the hiring manager and being very specific and deliberate about what they say. Now, here's a list or a graphic of companies at the conference. I'm not going to introduce Corning or Boston Scientific because I'm going to let our panel do that. But other companies like Komatsu, which is a mining equipment company, Origis Energy, which is a solar company, but not like solar on your house, more like a 10-acre solar farm that provides power to the grid. Stryker, which is a medical device company. Loves, which is, man, I want to call it a travel stop company, but it's so much more than that. But Loves for field-based general management. Linde is an industrial and commercial gas company. Eurofin Scientific is a $2 billion French-owned testing company. Hubble is one of the largest electrical equipment providers, both industrial, commercial, and residential on the globe. Intuitive Surgical, they are the pioneers of surgical robotics and robotic surgery. Motorola Solution, company that's been around for over 100 years. Many of you have heard of that company before. I'd probably floor you if I told you some of the facts of some of the innovation that they've made through the years. Symbotic is a robotics company focused primarily in supply chain logistics. So if you've ever seen a state-of-the-art distribution center, it's probably Symbotic robots in that distribution center. And then Amcor. Amcor is a $15 billion international packaging equipment company. They were new to the conference. The first time they had attended a conference, the Amcor actually came to the conference from a former alum who we placed at another company who's now a VP there. And a lot of times when a company's brand new to the conference, they may not get a hire on their first shot because these things move. It moves fast for the candidate. It also moves fast for the company. But Amcor came to the conference and got a hire. So good for them. So this isn't all the companies represented at the conference, but just a slew that I thought you might find interesting. And I tried to choose some that would give you a deeper perspective. I'll do this slide very quickly. There's four main career field categories: business analysis. So we had jobs, senior financial analyst at Johnson & Johnson, product manager at Komatsu, project manager at Motorola Solutions within their post-sale systems integration group, business-to-business sales, roles like territory specialist from LivaNova, account manager at J.J. Kane, which is division of Altec, and then field sales associate, which is division of Boston Scientific within their urology and pelvic health group. Engineering management, supplier quality engineer at Edwards Life Sciences, which is a medical device equipment company focused mostly on products around the heart and structural heart. Reliability engineer for Koch Industries, one of the largest privately held companies in our nation. And application sales engineer at Messer America, which is an industrial and commercial residential gas company. And then team leadership roles, production supervisor, that says product, but it should say production supervisor at Whippany Actuation Systems, which is a division of TransDigm, multi-billion dollar, mostly aerospace company. Automation general manager at Symbotic, we already talked about them. And then supply chain manager at PepsiCo, a company obviously most of you probably recognize. So again, I do this slide just to give you a little bit more perspective and context about companies at the conference. And then the last slide regarding this, and this one is a little bit of a busy chart, but all of our panel will fully recognize this chart because this is basically your interview schedule. And so you can see Sally Struthers here, which is a fictitious name. This is actually an interview from the January conference. You can see I've, picked out a date. This is none of their interview schedules, but I'll just kind of walk through this one very quickly. Boston Scientific sales job, Motorola sales job, Origis business development, LivaNova sales, Amcor sales, this person likes sales, Messer America account manager, Intuitive sales, Boston Scientific sales, Linde engineering management, Hubble engineering management, mostly it says procurement, but it's an engineering job, and then Corning, which is also an engineering job. So you can see that the mix for this person was more of a sales engineering mix, but again, every one of these schedules is curated. A couple of things you can appreciate. This is, interviews on Microsoft Teams, Google Meet, Zoom, and those were the kind of the big three. And then every one of these had their own URL. So for the interview, you would just go into this sheet, click on your URL, boom, it launches another screen and takes you to your interview. So when you come to the conference, this is a lot of what you'll see in your own specific situation. Okay, here we go. So I'd like for each of you guys to introduce yourselves. So you can see I've got you on the screen here. Tell me who you are, what you did in the military, how long you were in the Cameron Brooks program, and a little bit about your company. Now, you can see Harry and Colin both are going to Corning. I usually try to avoid that, but I really wanted both of these guys on here along with Austin. So they're going to end up talking about Corning. And Harry, if you cover it well enough, Colin, you'll just say, yeah, what Harry said. So anyway, Harry, why don't you start with this, go kind of in the order you are on my screen here. Harry, why don't you kick us off? Who are you? What'd you do in the military? And tell us about Corning a little bit.
Sure. Thanks, Pete. So like Pete said, I'm Harry Donahue. I'm a former civil affairs and field artillery officer. So I made the transition about 4 years into my military career to go into special operations, and then did another approximately 4 years in civil affairs. During that time, right before I recognized getting out, I reached out to Pete. So I've been doing the Cameron Brooks program now for about 15 months.
Yep.
And then the past, I guess, 6 months, really, I've been part of the SkillBridge program. So I'm sure Pete can mention that at the end, but it's been really beneficial for me to dive deep into DPP, into my interview schedules, my study groups, and really get a hold of all that information. So now I accepted a position with Corning in their Corning Optical Communications Rotational Engineering role. So I'll be working alongside with Colin. We'll be exposed to a variety of engineering systems and equipment, processes and procedures as part of their optical communications, fiber optics and cabling group in North Carolina. So it's a lot of different opportunities and exposure. Gives us a good background because we both have a technical aptitude before we really dive into what Corning has to offer.
Excellent. Thank you. And yeah, we are just for, I'm sure many of you know, but if you don't, we are a DOD skill bridge provider. We do up to 90 day skill bridges, and most people butt that skill bridge up against their terminal leap. So if you want to know more about that, just let me know and be glad to fill you in on that. Okay, Austin, go for it. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, my name's Austin Wire. As you can see, I was an Army Intel officer. I was with the Ranger Regiment for a few years, and then ended up kind of finishing out my Army time at Fort Knox with 5th Corps. I joined the Cameron Brooks program kind of late in the process. It was in October 2023 for a January conference, so I had a lot of nonstop reading. Well, I don't read, so mostly listening to podcasts and audiobooks and stuff. But I was able to get like 90% of it done, and it helped a lot. Ultimately ended up picking a position with Boston Scientific as a Watchman clinical specialist. So Watchman is just one of their products they use for one of their atrial fibrillation specialty products to kind of cure that, so they don't have to take blood thinners and things like that. But Boston Scientific has a huge spectrum of medical devices and medical programs. But I specifically will be in the operating room working with surgical teams and patients to help them get the care that they need.
And one of the things I'll say about Austin is when he came to the conference and he did an interview for that Watchman job, that Watchman is a very, very important product in the Boston Scientific portfolio. And he interviewed for a different role and a different set of products within the group. And the hiring manager and the hiring manager's boss were really impressed with Austin, liked what he was bringing to the table, and thought he could handle the Watchman job. So here he is, going into a role that he didn't interview for, at least at the conference. And so pretty fun and interesting. Yeah. Okay, Colin, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Pete. Hey, everyone. My name is Colin Stringer. As you can see by there, I'm Army Infantry. I was basically infantry for 5-ish years. Finished my time going to Special Force Assessment Selection. Really got messed up there, and then I basically said, this ain't it, so I looked to transition. I was kind of like Austin, a short-timer. I got contacted by Cameron Brooks in October, but I wasn't officially with them until November, and then January job conference. Yeah. So yeah, basically 3 months, quick and dirty, but I was actually in the transition period looking for a skill bridge opportunity. It was grace God and the luck of the Irish that I got it. Went through the January conference, got a significant amount of yeses for follow-on interviews, but ultimately chose Corning, kind of like what Harry said, getting about 3 month exposure to different industries within that company. And it also gets you like a good overview of where you might like end up in that particular company in that field study. And I know that's not a guarantee that all the other jobs have that opportunity, but that's at least why I chose Corning, because it had more opportunity before I finally stuck with it.
Love it. And that's one thing I'll say. If you don't have as much time to your transition or to your career conference, really, and you do have access to the Skill Bridge, I'd strongly recommend, if your chain of command will allow it, you basically treat preparation like a full-time job, and still a lot of work, but at least you have the opportunity to really get up to speed. So, okay, gents, thank you very much. All right. So I think what I'll do, I'm going to leave this screen up. So these, you know, you can, if you'd like, for the folks that are listening in, you can type in questions along the way. I'm going to throw them some questions here for a little bit. And then you may already have some questions, or based on things they say, you may have more questions. And again, I'll moderate all those questions that you type in toward the end. All right. So my first question is, and I'd like to hear from all of you on this one. What's the one thing, and there's more than one thing you did, obviously, but what's the one thing you did before the conference that really paid off for you at the conference? And Austin, why don't you start us off there?
I think kind of two things, but I did them simultaneously, is I found somebody who was not in the military to give my answers to, you to make sure that they understood what I was saying. And then simultaneously, I explained to them what the job role that I was interviewing for, or kind of the type of business analysis sales, kind of explained that to them to solidify that I actually knew what I was interviewing for and being able to make those deliberate connections. So when I got to the interview, again, kind of emphasizing what Pete said with inferring intent, you could kind of minimize that a little bit if you explicitly say how they're connected and directly tie that. So that was really beneficial for me, I think.
Thank you. Good stuff. Colin, how about it?
Yeah. So for me, I'm kind of have like two things too. One is like making sure the resume that you actually invest a lot of information, good quality stuff in the one page resume that it ends up being, because at least for two of the companies that I had follow-on interviews for, they actually asked me questions directly related to the resume that I wasn't actually really prepared for, because a lot of you are probably going through with like the prepared questions, be like, all right, I know this all the back of my head, but some of the questions they have were like pertaining to my senior year in college with how they related to this particular field. I'm like, oh, okay. So kind of knowing the resume is good, and then knowing what's in there so you can actually talk about it, they actually do read that. And then as well as having kind of versatility in the, I guess, prepped questions, chances are you're never going to be able to see the actual rehearsed answer to the questions or anything. Like seldom will they ever actually ask you a question that relates to that specifically. For me, I had like 3 to 4 experiences that I could talk about straight off the cuff of like, I know this so well that I can apply it to this position. So it's kind of how quickly I can say, oh, this is a perfect example for this particular question. So it's versatility. You don't need to have 20 prepared questions, but if you have 4 questions, you say, well, it was this particular experience, but you extrapolate that of what goes into what, that's what helped me.
Yeah, that's really good. And I will say, you know, you'll hear me say this over and over and over again, you guys, memorize the method, don't memorize the answer. All you guys, yeah, that's right. Shake your heads. That's exactly right. Because if you truly memorize the method on how to answer an interview question, specifically Bluff Star, every single one of the bullets on your resume is written like a bluff statement without the word I and without that pronoun, but you put the pronoun, throw that pronoun on there, and suddenly you have I, verb, action, result. I say every one of your bullets, actually not every one, every one of your accomplishment bullets is nothing more than a bottom line up front statement to an accomplishment. And everyone knows that some bullets are stronger than others on your resume, no problem. But man, every conference I talk to, more than one person who says, I wasn't planning on giving this answer as I was preparing the interview, but when I got into the interview, I learned something new or I learned something different, and this answer over here just fit better. And I wasn't practicing it much, but I knew the Bluff Star, so I nailed it. And I think that is an excellent technique for your study groups. Once you guys get up and running, like move tab 5 out of the way and start asking each other questions off your resume and really trying to throw each other curveballs as best you can. Thanks, Colin. And Harry, how about you? What's one thing you did that really paid off at the conference?
Yeah, Pete. So I'm actually going to kind of follow that up with the one thing that helped me out most was I started really early. And again, this is for April, but I started really early with my study group. And then as things got really close to the conference, I was meeting with my study group 3. And every once in a while, I'd meet with a 4th time per week. and developing those answers based upon, like, I'd give my resume to the rest of my study group, and then they would ask me questions based upon my resume. So like Colin said, he wasn't quite ready for that resume question. You know, my study group was trying to throw me curveballs, especially the last month leading up to the conference. And almost in a way, we got rid of the flashcard questions because we practiced them so much and we knew the methodology. So we would just use Bluffstar for any kind of question we could think of. And that helped me out the most.
And I think Perry probably got tired of me because I knew he was reading so much. I started like pushing newcomers his way. I'm like, hey, I know this guy's meeting a lot. Just go talk to Harry and he's going to get you squared away. So I appreciate you doing that. I mean, you were on SkillBridge. I figured you had the time.
And plenty of time, Pete.
Plenty of time. I love it. All right. Well, let's go in reverse order now. All right. So if you could identify just one thing that you wish you would have done differently or better or whatever it might be, where would you go with that, Harry?
I think for me, Pete, it's because I had two different roles in the Army. I had the field artillery stuff and I had the civil affairs stuff. I wish I'd spent more time developing internal answers and experiences that dealt with specific problem solving. Because civil affairs was a lot of people relationship type issues, which is really hard to fit into the peg of how do I solve a company's problems. So I knew how to understand and develop relationships with other individuals, but I didn't spend enough time on developing those 3 to 4 solid problem solving experiences that I can use throughout any interview.
Because you're talking about, let me be real clear about that. Because you're talking about, they ask you a question about how you solved a problem or manage a complex situation, and it was operational in nature, right? Maybe not as relational in nature. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. And so for those that are on the call, you know, I think that's a good indication of some of what you could expect. I mean, that's the type of flavor, at least in relative to Harry's interview schedule, that he was seeing. That's really good. Thank you. How about you, Colin? One thing you potentially would do differently, different before the conference?
Yeah. So maybe develop the ability to kind of like read the room, as it were. Mm-hmm. So like some of my no's or like the yes with a question mark that ended up being a no, I guess, kind of came from like my presentation. So kind of like what Pete said, people reading into things, it's how it's presented, how it's received. Like I always approached every interview with trying to solve the problem at hand, read up on the company in that position, so I thought it was good. And I approached it with the same mentality, but ultimately it's like, you're probably not going to get along with everybody. And that's not to say, you know, argumentative. It's just going to say like, oh, I didn't like his personality, even though some people said this guy has the best personality, but there was literally no change from what I could tell from interview to interview. It's just kind of the location. So it's kind of the developing the versatility of approaching it, because sometimes some people don't receive it the same way. And I didn't catch on to that until like the second day. I'm like, oh.
Okay. Yeah, well, exactly. That's really good. I wonder how you would practice that though, Colin, and for the group. How do you think we could replicate? How could this group replicate a little bit of that in their group? Study groups are hard, right? It's kind of, to a degree, it's a little bit of blind leading the blind. You're not exactly sure. You don't exactly know what to expect. How do you think they could replicate or somehow mitigate that?
It's kind of hard to prep for it, which is why I was kind of like taken, you know, hit by a wall of bricks with it, because I was like, wow, like, you know, I didn't think about that. Some of the companies I meshed well with kind of had a Cameron Brooks alumni or a veteran from the military. So sometimes if you're going to flub up a word or you're going to use an acronym, which you're trying to get away from, obviously, they kind of understand that. And then we kind of, as officers, we have like that attacking mentality, trying to figure it out as is, just in the 30-minute conversation we can have. Kind of dropping a name like Komatsu kind of had the same thing, where I was dropping out specifics, and maybe it was received where I was too specific and they wanted a generalist in the area. Mm-hmm. So it's approaching the same job in the same position, but with a different intent, where it's like, well, we want you to focus actually on this position and not the overall company. Like, some of them appreciated that I knew the company and what they were stood for. Some of them couldn't really care, I guess.
But I don't want anyone on this call to predict that. Everyone wants you to like know them wholeheartedly, and then we'll mm-hmm. I like what Colin said, read the room. Okay, Austin, how about you? How about one thing that perhaps you would have done different?
Yeah, I think it might be a little bit unique, but I'm sure everybody can kind of relate to it a little bit. So my wife is applying to vet school at the same time, and very well no idea where she was going to go. And so sometimes that came up in conversation. They'd ask, oh, what schools did she apply to? And they might not have been schools in the area that they're hiring for. And I would just kind of answer it more nonchalantly. But then going back to reading intent, they're like, oh, well, if she applied to Texas Tech, then you only want to work in Texas. And so I had to do a lot of, a lot of saving face, I guess, of like, no, like we plan on going separate ways for a less short period of time. I'm open to, you know, pursuing growth, career, things like that. But it came up in just about every interview I had. So
this is humongous. Listen, you're not hiding things, everyone. I don't want you hiding any things or quibbling or anything like that. But listen, stuff like that will people will just infer intent. And then instead of like spending time in the interview connecting directly to the job and your experience and demonstrating interest, you're like explaining, no, I love her, but we're going to do separate things for a while. It's like, oh no. So yes, I'm really glad. I'm sorry that happened to you. And it obviously worked out just fine, but I'm really glad that happened to you to just give people some perspective on what things might look like. That's really good. All right. What I'm going to do, just because I'm going to try to shorten this a little bit, some questions are pouring in, and I want to make sure we get all the questions before we get all of my questions. I think that's more. So let's do one more of mine, but I'm going to combine the two. Favorite interview and hardest interview. But don't say my favorite interview is the company that gave me, hired me. I mean, I guess you could, but I don't really want you to like mention a bunch of companies. I just wanted, it's more of like, how did it go? What made it good? And then what made an interview hard? So Colin, why don't you start us off with this one?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of split between two of my favorite interviews. One was, I guess, Corning. And then the other one was Coke. Corning was actually my first interview. So it's kind of like chafing off the dirt. You're trying to understand how this whole thing's going to happen. This is real time. This is game time. And that was just like learning the ebbs and flows, and how the discussion went was like, it was a unanimous yes. And I'm like, yeah, we liked the way you presented it. And so I'm like, oh, you know, it was low threat, no hostile environment. Coke was kind of the same way, where I don't think he asked a particular question, like either rehearsed one or like, you know, show me how you do this. That was my example with where the resume basically spoke for itself. We ultimately just talked about like what we did for hobbies, where his 17-year-old daughter was thinking of going to college in Kansas. And I'm like, wow, that's literally a conversation instead of the structured thing. The hardest one was, I'm forgetting the name.
Don't tell me. I don't even want to know the name. Just tell me about the interview. Don't mention the name.
Yeah. So probably a good thing I don't remember the name. I guess it was too traumatic. So it was for the position. I was read up on it, like all the other companies I had. I thought I was prepared. And that was the perfect example where me, the interviewer and myself were not meshing well. And I just couldn't get a read on him. I'm like, did that answer land? It was just like the guy had a perfect poker face. And I was just like, it's weird because it wasn't spurring more conversations like all the other ones were doing. So it's when someone's like a brick wall, like I said, sometimes you're probably just not going to get along with that particular individual for unknown reason. But I was like, I'm trying here. I'm trying different areas. I just could not figure it out.
So let me say one thing before, Harry, we're going to go to you next. Let me just say this one thing. I hired a guy one time. I used to work at Johnson & Johnson, and I hired a guy to manage Eastern Texas. His name was Richard. And when I called Richard to offer him the job, I was in an airport flying somewhere. And I said, Richard, man, I really liked what we did, and I want to offer you the opportunity. And he accepted, and he became someone on my team. And he's like, later on, he's like, I can't believe you gave me the offer. I couldn't connect with you, and I couldn't read you. And these guys know me, right? I'm pretty easygoing guy, pretty laid back. But like, everyone has an interview style. And if you think about it, and I remember at my conference, I had something like Colin, like this guy at the company was Arrow, and we played about golf. We talked about golf. We talked about Boston. We talked about his kids, my kids. It was a great interview, but like everyone has their own style. And when I was an interviewer, I wasn't messing around, man. I wanted to find people that could deliver for my team. And so I'm not saying it was right. I wasn't the nicest interviewer. I wasn't trying to be mean. I was just looking for who I was looking for. So I guess my point in all of that is just be careful not to over over assign value to someone just because, you know, you don't connect with them. And I'm not minimizing what Colin's saying. It's just hard. The reason I'm saying this is because it's hard. Like, if they're not giving you much and you're not getting much, it's like, well, I guess they don't even like me. And that may not be true at all. So all that to say, just be real careful with that. Okay, Harry, how about you? Favorite interview and maybe hardest interview?
Yeah, so Pete, I had one interview where two interviewers, it was a technical role, an engineering role, and immediately off the bat, I connected on a personal level, kind of like Colin was saying, with the interviewers. Mm-hmm. And once I kind of connected on a personal level, they kind of went into flashcard questions that I was immediately able to answer. All of my experiences lined up directly with the role. I felt very well prepared for it. In follow-up interviews, I had an opportunity to talk to more of the engineers on the team. And again, it was a back and forth conversation mixed together with flashcard questions. There was never any pause in the interviews, and it flowed the whole time. At certain points in time, there were jokes being cracked. It felt conversational, and at the same time, they were prodding me in a good way to get the information out of me. I really enjoyed it because I liked what the company was doing. Ultimately didn't accept the role, but I really enjoyed the interviewers, mostly on a personal level, as well as how the interview flowed. But on the flip side of that, my hardest interview, I think, was at the end of a day, so at the end of day one. So the tips is eat and drink throughout the day because you are going to be tired at the end of the day. And it was a lot of flashcard questions, Pete. I had multiple times when there was a flashcard question, I tried to relate it back to an experience and give a question back, and it just, nothing quite landed. I wasn't able to connect my experiences as well as I wanted to. That coupled with being tired just made it not my greatest interview.
Good tip. Eat, drink. I do want to give one more pro tip. Harry mentioned, hey, we were cracking jokes. This is the pro tip. If there's going to be a joke session, let them start it. Sometimes people's like natural nervous release is to try to lighten the room with some jokes. And I've seen that go horribly wrong more times than I can count, having been at Camera Brooks for the time that I have. And so jokes are okay as long as they start the jokes. You don't start the jokes. That would be a pro tip. All right, one more. Austin, and then we're gonna look at the folks that are on the call. We're gonna look at their questions, and then if we get through them and we still have a little bit of time left, we'll come back to the couple that I had sent you guys before the time. So, favorite interview and hardest interview, Austin.
Sure. Yeah, my favorite interview was actually the follow-on interview with Boston Scientific for a bunch of different reasons. I interviewed with like six different people that day, so I was just bouncing around from place to place. And then I also got to see them work in the operating room. So I got to get the scrubs on and everything and see that product like live stream. And it was kind of lucky. It was a surgeon that was okay with us talking while they're doing the procedure. So I was able to ask questions in that moment, and like they're pointing to everything. And it was just so involved. I loved every second of it. And the people that I met there were super happy and like inviting. So they just made it super easy. I think that's part of why it was my favorite. But the hardest, very similar to Colin. I had an interview where it was with two individuals virtually, and I think I saw one of them smile once in the entire like 45 minute to an hour interview. And they just did not care about any like personal stuff. They're entirely focused on business, work, operational connections. And so very similar, it's just I couldn't gauge how I was doing. So it's hard to adjust mid-interview of like, well, do they care about this or do they not? Should I just keep going? So it's just really challenging.
Yeah, it's good. Thank you. Yeah, that's the reality for the group that's on the call. Very much the reality. So, you know, and I think in every interview, and these guys will probably agree, you know, there's two extremes. There's kind of the what Colin said with, you know, we talked about the daughter and Kansas and college and all that. And then the other extreme, and what, you know, is very structured. And what we typically see companies that, companies that are a little bit more established, like, you know, blue chip Fortune 100 type companies, they tend to have a little bit more of a regimen and structure, not all the time. And it certainly depends on the role, but they tend to have a little bit more regimen and structure. Now, Boston Scientific fits in that bill, and they didn't do that, obviously, with Austin. But so it's not a hard and fast rule, obviously, but we tend to see that a little bit more. So really good, you guys. Thank you. That's great insight for the group. Okay, I'm going to turn to questions. And the first question, okay, Jackson said, did any of you have multiple interviews with the same company at the career conference? If so, did that add extra pressure to the first interview with that company? And so I'm going to interpret that. And Jackson, you can correct me if this is not, but I think what he's saying is, did you have like multiple interviews with the same company for the same role? Now at this conference, like for instance, two Boston Scientifics were there, the EP group, as well as the urology pelvic health group, completely separate. It could have been two Boston Scientific interviews, but it might as well have been two completely different interviews. So I think what he's saying is, did anyone have two interviews with the same company, maybe even with the same hiring manager? I don't think anyone had that. There was only a couple of people that actually did do that. Now, there is a scenario, you guys, where like you interview with a company on Monday and they, for some reason, they want to see you again on Tuesday. And that could be the case. That certainly when we used to do in-person conferences, that was relatively prevalent for some of the opportunities. We don't see that nearly as much anymore, so I don't think that'll be an issue. Jackson, if that is not what you were driving at, let me know, and we'll get back to your question. Michaela asks, when it came time to prioritize / choose companies, what factors did you consider, and what strategy did you use to assess these factors? This is such a good question. Let me amplify that just a little bit, if I may, Michaela. So she's saying like, okay, we're done with interviewing at the conference. I had all my interviews, and I need to narrow down to the group of companies that I'm going to do follow-ups with. And usually that narrowing down process gets you down to, you know, four or five companies that you're going to do follow-ups with. And so, you know, like she said, what criteria did you use? What were you thinking about as you were assessing each one of these in order to create a top group? Austin, why don't you start? What did you come up with?
Yeah, so I had 7 out of 9, I think, said yes to a follow-on interview, and I narrowed it down to about 5. So I had to cut 2 of them out. And some of the most important things that I was looking at for me was not so much focused on the initial job, because a lot of those, you'd only be in that role for maybe 1 to 2 years. Sometimes they're closer to 6, but looking at the growth opportunity and kind of looking at those beyond roles and if I would be happy in those ones and that kind of career path or trajectory that they had, or if they had flexibility to, you know, maybe I don't like that first job and I want to go a different career path, but still stay with that company. So overall, I was looking at the culture of the company and then the opportunities that were with it beyond, not so much focused on what was in that initial offer as much.
Very good. Anybody have anything different or to add to that?
I've got a little bit to add there, Pete.
Yeah.
Is kind of throughout the whole process, I would talk to my wife about, hey, this is how this interview went. This is how the culture feels. This is what the job actually does. Because what you guys learn on the Saturday and Sunday of the career conference before interviews, what the company actually does and what their background is and what you're going to be doing in that role. So kind of like the role, the overall company culture, is the location a good fit for my family? Because that's definitely always part of it. And do I see myself, like Austin said, at this company within the next 2 to 6 to 10 years? And once I, you know, figured all of those things out, I got kind of lucky, Pete, that all of my yeses were also all my top group. So I didn't really have to narrow anything down. Just kind of, it happened to work out that way. But that was the general strategy that I used.
Very nice. Colin, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, mine's pretty similar to both of them. Really, like, the forefront of thought, especially when you're going through the career conference, is, like, just getting the yeses. So, I mean, like you said, this is a great question, because you need to have the opportunity to say no, so the ball right. needs to be in your court. So, like, me, I was just focusing on getting yeses, and I had technically 4 out of 8 yeses for follow-on interviews. It turned out to be 3 because it just in the background decided to go with someplace else. You know, don't take it personally. It's going to happen. But it's just like you want to get the yeses. So then you look for, like what Harry was saying, what the company stands for. Can you see yourself in this position? Are you a single guy, or is this going to be too task on the family because us all be military? Moving other locations is, you know, nothing new to us. But now that you're civilian, now you're starting to think of like, well, okay, thinking of more permanence, is this too tasking? Something along those lines.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then even if they do like give you the salary in the data sheet, the Saturday and Sunday before the conference, don't even look at the number. Cause like I said, it's getting the yeses is what you care about. Cause if you get a no, you don't even have to care about the salary because it's not even an option. Yeah. Then that can be, you know, an influencing thing, but it's really also like how you develop, what's this opportunity, the location, can you live with that? It's, I mean, this is a plethora of, this question opens up a lot.
One of the things though, that's good, you guys. One of the things I hear is consistently with all three of the answers, and I say this to people all the time, as a matter of fact, I've made alliteration out of it: culture, chemistry, and career progression. Culture, chemistry, career progression. And the thing is, we talk so much about the conference, about location, and we talk a little bit about salary, and but let me tell you, like what Colin said is right. Earn the yes, evaluate culture, chemistry, career progression, and location and money, but get the yes. Treat every interview like it's your only interview. Get the yes, and then decide which ones you're going to pursue. And I think all of that, all of you, just really, really good feedback. All right, so Brett says, he feels like you all were prepared, which I know you were. Were any of you struggling to connect your experience to the question, and how do you handle it? And then he kind of gave you a little bit more. He said, you know, like shooting from the hip, like you had your prepared answers. I'm going to interpret this a little. You had your prepared answers, but you ended up getting a question that didn't kind of meet the prepared answers. And so you had to shoot from the hip a little bit. Or connect your background. Can you guys just speak to that a little bit? Anybody, just weigh in.
Yeah, definitely. So this is kind of along the lines where I said I had basically four main experiences that I could plug into certain areas, whether it be like strategic planning, even like accounting level things. But kind of the example I had where I just was not meshing well with this individual, that job actually ended up being a no as a result. So I kind of felt that right. Sometimes how you are presenting that experience that you think it's going to be going to this position is kind of received differently. And then you have to do, like, for lack of a better term, damage control to say like, oh, well, this is what I actually meant to say. So it's having the prepared experience, understanding what the job and that position in the job is, and then kind of warboarding it for like 5 minutes to say like, well, this would be better for this because it's more project manager and less engineering, if that's what the job calls for.
Yeah, and that's really it, you guys. You're having the ability to be very flexible. That's why this idea, memorize the method, don't memorize the answer, is so important, because you are not going to predict every question that you get at the conference. It just ain't going to happen. And so you're way better off having the core of your answers, but doing what Harry said earlier in his group, like they just put, after a while, you just put tab 5 to the side and start throwing, you know, if you were an animal, what animal would you be type questions to each other? You know, if you were a superhero, what superhero would you be and why? Just throw crazy stuff at each other so you can start to really get flexible in your interviewing. How about this? Did any of you, you know, were there any points of friction when you were earning an offer? You know, you had one offer from one company, one offer from another, and maybe they were wanting you to kind of answer them. Anybody have to deal with some of like a timing issue or anything like that in the follow-up interview process? Harry, go ahead.
Yeah, so I had one, Pete, where I already had one offer on the table. I was traveling. I was in the airport in Charlotte on my way to go do 2 back-to-back in-person interviews.
Yeah.
And I had a call come in from a fourth company that said they wanted me to come out the following week. And if I decided to come out on that following week, I'd have to drop the offer that I currently had on the table, which was from Corning, ended up being from Corning. And I would also have to drop potential offers from the two companies I was about to interview for. So for me, I already had an offer on the table, which was a nice thing to have in my pocket, especially while doing follow-up interviews throughout the process. But that was my major point of friction, is I really liked this other company, but do I like it enough to drop off my other top 2 or top 3 company that was on my list?
And the intention, you guys, is to, it'd be nice if every company had their own timeline and they're like, hey, yeah, you interview with everyone, but you know, you got to just remember, like, as soon as you're in the interview process, they're motivated. And most companies will work with you and work with us and say, hey, you know the deal, they're still in the interview process. And we do a lot of blocking and tackling and extending deadlines and things like that on your behalf. That is absolutely true. But there are scenarios and situations, and you just heard one of them where it's like, yeah, I got an offer. And, you know, if I would have pursued this other one, you know, this wasn't right for us. And so it's something that, you know, you guys are going to be talking to the Cameron Brooks follow-up team pretty regularly, and we're going to help you inform you. And there's no backdoor dealing. There's no backdoor dealing. You're going to know everything we know when we know it. And we're going to navigate this with you. All right, let's keep going, because the questions are still piling in, which is great. Were you familiar, and Austin, maybe you take this one since you went to a medical device company and you don't have a medical device background. So here we go. This is your question. Were you familiar with the technical aspects or industry specifics with the company before you interviewed with them, with the company? If not, what resources did you find most helpful in familiarizing yourself with them?
Yeah, so was not familiar with Boston Scientific, Watchman, or their EP mapping at all before the conference. We got a ton of stuff from the company briefs from Cameron Brooks, which was super helpful. And then Pete actually reached out to everyone interviewing with Boston Scientific and gave us some more links. But also, I'm pretty sure every medical device company is going to have this, but they have a like big news page. So you can click on that, see what's new. Seeing the product just recently got FDA approved. So just a lot of looking internally in their page, and just Google was super helpful. YouTube is nice. And so before the conference, I didn't know a ton, but I had about a week to prepare before my follow on. And so I was just Googling every single day, reading stuff up, watching videos. And so going into the procedure, I actually was nervous. I wasn't going to know anything, but it all kind of popped down. I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. I read about that. I saw a picture of that. So as long as you have that willingness to learn and interest in it, I think it's going to come pretty easily to you.
It's really good. You know, and it's not just medical device companies, you guys. If you go to any websites, their blog or their newsfeed, I mean, that's just what they want you to read. That's what they want the public to read. And it can be super helpful. Broadly though, what I'll say, and I think Austin just said it, is we're going to brief you a week from today. I'm going to teach you how to break down a job description. And then at the conference, you're going to get a briefing for every single interview that you're going to go into. And every company knows you got other interviews, so they're not going to like beat you up if you don't know the minutest details about the company. But you definitely want to go in prepared to connect to the company and the role and your interest. And we're going to teach you some techniques on how to do that. But then what Austin said is, in the follow-up interview process, whether it's days or a week, you know, your job in the follow-up interview, your full-time job in the follow-up interview process, is to do your research, because that's where all of that will come. Not all, much of that will come in preparation. Okay, Harry, why don't you take this one? As most of our study group transition to the run phase, hopefully that's true, Tyler, is there a memorable question that you answered that was outside of the flashcard questions? And this is for the whole group. Just one question real quick. Do you remember any memorable questions you were like, oh, I wish I would have been a little bit more prepared for that?
Nothing off the top of my head, Pete.
Okay.
I can say the ones that gave me the most trouble, or at least memorable in general, was any question that I had on my resume from a really old job. So I had things on there, was like, tell me about the time you stood up the safety program as the assistance intelligence officer. And I'm like, I've never talked about that. Not once.
I was about to say, I've never done that. I'm like, oh no.
No, so I had to go back in and pull out the Bluff Star method for this particular role using that one accomplishment statement.
Yeah, right on. Okay. Anybody else? Anybody else? Any other curveballs that you're just like, whoa?
Yeah. So mine wasn't necessarily the main question. It was the follow-on question from my answer they had to it. Was, speaking of like standing up a safety procedure, holding people reliable to a safety procedure, they had asked, like, because I used an example of how I stood up to leaders who were like five ranks above me, like holding them to the standards and things like that. And kind of giving me a poker face, literally having like no emotion in how they asked it, were like, would you do that again? I'm like, the way I presented it, it could have been, they think I'm a loose cannon and, like, you know, have no respect for authority, or at the same time, like, hey, it's a safety thing. Nobody's above safety. So, like, you got to stick to your guns. Just be honest. And that's like, yeah, I gave a candid response. I'm like, here you go, because I would do it again.
And that's one thing you guys may want to do in your study groups is in your run phase. Like, when someone answers a question, you know, if you're really trying to be kind of creative, like, ask them another question. Just exactly what Colin said. And sometimes it can be simple, like, would you do it again? Or what would you do different? Or if you had to do it over again, what would you do different? Yeah, I think that's great. That's really good, Colin. That's one technique that you can really use in your run phase to get it going. How about you, Austin? Anything before we move on to the next question?
Yeah, I don't think it was a crazy curveball, but it kind of ties into that previous question too. They asked me about some college courses I took. So with it being a very technical role, they asked me about a class I took in nuclear engineering. And they said, tell me about one of the hardest things that you experienced in that class and why. And they kind of emphasized, they're like, we just want to know that you have the ability to learn about it. And so it's gave you the opportunity to really emphasize not only your aptitude, but your interest in learning that. And so if you don't have the background, you can make up for it and be like, well, I really want to learn it. And here's how I know I can learn it.
Yeah.
So that's there you go. For me.
I like it. All right, we're going to do speed round here. I've got my eye on the clock a little bit. Did anybody encounter encounter a practical portion of your interview, meaning like situational in nature? What would you do in this situation where there is no bluff star answer? It's just like, what would you do? Anybody encounter that? Harry, go ahead.
I had just one where it was a panel interface of a panel I would see on the job. And the question was, find the problem. And that was it.
Okay.
So I wanted to see my problem solving techniques and if I could find and figure out my way through an interface for the job.
I think there are some of those. We see those sometimes in engineering and marketing, but maybe like if you were a Christmas tree salesman, it was December 26th and you had 10,000 pre-cut Christmas trees. What would you do? You can't burn them. You got to make money. So that might be a good idea, but really only when you get in your run phase, maybe start looking up some of those questions. Everyone had one. So just again, lightning round, just for time's sake, anybody else want to give their, just very quickly, their situational question?
Mine was probably the same as Harry. In fact, it's probably the same company, but yeah, it was okay. It was a human interface module thing that you would find on the job.
Okay.
No math was required, but it's basically how quickly can you adapt, which the question was the test basically. So. Sure.
And how about you, Austin?
Yeah, mine was more for a leadership position. They asked me, first, what do I think about a person who may not have aspirations? They're kind of content with where they're at. And then how would I, as their leader, motivate them to, you know, want to set goals, develop and grow like that? And so that was kind of the practical applications.
Yeah, that can be helpful. I mean, some of that can be brought into your study group now, you guys. All right, I'm going to throw this one back at you, Austin. So keep going here. How important was it to already have experience in the specific products or industries of the company? Or was the approach more you can learn on the job specific related products? I want you to answer this very quick because again, you're in the Army, man. So you're not going into the OR every day. Yet when you start your company, you're going to be going into the OR every day. So how important is it, or how did you overcome it?
Yeah, so some of the companies that I interviewed, it was pretty important to them, but none of them was it a deal breaker if you didn't know it. You just had to have some kind of background that you could learn it or prove that you could learn it. And I think they can see if you genuinely are interested again, like if you get excited talking about it, or even more importantly, you ask questions about it. They're like, oh, he actually, because you can use that to show your baseline that you learned from researching. Like, oh, I saw, you know, in this ultrasound, that little nub, was that the device? And like, how does it stay in and things like that? So,
okay. Excellent. All right. Harry, why don't you take this one? For the interviews that were structured and felt harder to connect with personally, do you think it may be them trying to get a sense of your ability to prepare and speak with confidence versus connecting personally, which may be more of a focus on a follow-on interview?
So I would think, I think one is you have to go into every single interview with confidence regardless. As far as them trying to get a sense of the ability to speak with confidence, maybe, especially for the structured ones, I think they want to know, especially for some of the ones I'm thinking, is making sure that you have the experiences and that your experiences line up with what the position entails. I think part of that is connecting, not necessarily personally, but connecting to the job. And a lot of that is just, you know, reading through the job description, reading through the situations, and can you connect those experiences to the position?
That's good. All right, Colin, this one's for you. Did you use different techniques for panel interviews versus single person interview, or do you have recommendations for how to approach these? What did you do when you had multiple versus one?
So that's kind of interesting. I approach each interview with kind of the same way, same mentality. It's not necessarily letting them make the first move, but it's kind of like, I guess, applying the golden rule. How they drive it is how I respond to it. So if it's a panel interview and they ask like technical questions or, you know, how would I do this? Then cool, too easy. We're already prepared for that because that's all we've been doing these practice sessions. If it's individual ones, like I said, the guy from Cope, we were just joshing back and forth. That's too easy. That's, you know, well, if you're not a friendly person, then maybe up your ante on that skill. But yeah, if it's just talking and, you know, breathing the room, getting the flows going, just follow the flow, really.
One of the things that I find particularly helpful, you all, is when I'm in a panel interview, and let's say Austin just asked me an interview question and I'm talking to all of you, and Austin asked the question, what I try to do is I'm looking at the camera, but every once in a while, I'll use Austin's first name mid-sentence. As I'm describing what I'm trying to get across, Austin, I'll bring the question asker into, and I'll try to do that regardless of if it's panel interview or not, actually, whoever's asking the question. And I don't do it every single time because it can be a little bit too much, but the best and most effective use of a first name is mid-sentence. And do that two or three times in the interview, regardless of its panel or individual, and that'll be a real win. Okay, last question. And Austin, why don't you take this one? Were there any offers made from a company but kind of hesitated because you haven't heard from other companies yet? So this is a follow-up interview question. Someone made an offer. It's kind of what Harry went through earlier. Did you go through that?
Mine was a little bit different. A lot of my offers came very late and like all at once. So I was a little bit nervous for a different reason because I hadn't heard anything for a little while. But at least all mine, they were super flexible. They even asked like, hey, do you have any offers? What are their dates? So they were more asking if they needed to rush to get theirs in, or yeah. Some of them were even willing to flex theirs later if like I needed some time to.
I do think for the most part, the companies understand the deal and kind of go from there. I said that was the last question. Two more came in that I didn't see. So let me do this. What was the hardest part of the follow-up interview process? Were there times that you felt stumped on questions that they asked? Maybe questions that were different in some way, shape, or form than what you all experienced at the conference. Anybody remember anything just that were like, whoa, that's really off the wall or very different?
Not necessarily a question thing, but answering the hardest part of the follow-ons. For me, most of my follow-ons were literally back to back to back, and three out of the five were in person. And so one time I literally got on a plane to LA, spent 2 days there, flew back to Kentucky just to get back on a plane the next day and fly back out to San Jose. And so that part was super exhausting, but even more so is it sometimes got hard to keep track of what I told each company. Of like, well, did I already tell this story with them? Or, you know, am I sharing a new point or an old point? And so just kind of keeping everything focused and tracked. And I think having that notebook and this preparation sheets really helped you stay. Because while you're on the plane, you can read through like, okay, I got this part for them. So.
Excellent. All right, last question for real this time. Danielle said, what was the conversation like, let's say at the conference? Were you doing more of the talking? Were they doing much more of the talking? How much time did the recruiter or hiring manager talk about the company and the position? So great question to finish with, because in your study group, there's probably a lot of one-sided thing, but you get into the conversation, you get into the interview, and they probably are talking more than you were expecting. So Harry, why don't you field this one? What was your experience related to her question?
So I would say the conversational balance, I put a percentage on it there, Pete, would be 55 to 60% the interview speaking, and then 45, maybe I would just say 55, 45, probably. It's very close to 50-50.
Okay.
And the second part of that is how much time did the recruiter talk about the company or position? That was almost the first 5 to 8 minutes of every single interview. And it really helps because you can take all the information about the position of the company from the interview, tie that together with all the information that Pete's given you or Joel's given you in the conference setup the weekend prior, and you kind of merge it together with your answers. So I wasn't necessarily talking more than the interviewer was, but I still try to keep myself under that 3-ish minute mark for all those answers that you start to develop and using Bluffstar.
One point that is, it's a tangential to your point, you know, they're like Harry said, they're going to get in there and they're going to do some explaining as well. They don't know exactly what we've said, or they want to make sure that some specific points are demonstrated in the interview. And sometimes you hear stuff that I didn't tell you, or we didn't tell you either because we didn't know, or we weren't, you know, maybe things have changed a little bit. And so that's why it's so important to go into every interview and give it its due. Walk into every interview and treat it like it's your only interview, because you are armed with a certain amount of information, but you are not armed with every bit of information walking into the interview. And a lot of times, most of the time, you learn some new things. And sometimes it's like, oh, gosh, that's really interesting. I wish I would have known that before. I think I would have walked in here a little bit more interested. But now I'm more interested, but it may, just based on how things have gone, it may be too late for that. So remember, walk into every interview like it's your only interview and you'll be in great shape. Okay, you guys, we're a little bit over time. I'm extremely grateful for the panel here. Thank you. Congratulations, by the way, coming to the conference, well-prepared, getting pursuits, getting offers, finding the best one for you. You know, of course, we do these post-conference to really encourage the next group. Hey, we're four weeks from Friday is the next conference. And so I hope this was valuable to you all that attended live. Thank you so much for doing that. Again, thanks for the panel for being here. Best of success. I know you're all getting ready to start work here in the next month or so. So good luck to you and good luck to the group coming to the April conference. You guys have a great night and thanks again. Thanks again for listening to another edition of the Cameron Brooks podcast. Hopefully some of the insight that some of our most recent alumni gave during this post-conference review has been helpful to you as you're thinking about your situation in terms of where you are in your transition and making some of those important decisions. Stay tuned for the next episode. In 2 weeks, I'm going to introduce you to Kingsley Spiller. Kingsley is a Cameron Brooks alumnus. He came to a conference in April of 2016, and he's been leading his career in multiple different roles at Aldi. And so I'm looking forward to sharing his experience with you in that episode. Of course, if you want to know more about Cameron Brooks, who we are, what we do, you can find a ton of information about us on our website, including a blog that we publish to every week, as well as transition guides and other things that are really designed to help the military officer in terms of gathering information and making more decisions. Of course, you can find us on a lot of social platforms, YouTube, LinkedIn, Instagram, and others. So that's it for today. Again, thanks for tuning in. Make it a great day.